Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
As I was saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You've heard that dozens and dozens of times. But is it actually true? If we have strong emotional resilience, are we better able to cope with difficult situations? To discuss this, I'm joined in studio by Dr. Harry Barry, GP and mental health specialist, and from our Limerick studio by Dr. Anne-Marie Creven from the Department of Psychology at the University of Limerick. Good morning to both
of you.
Good
morning, Philip. How are you doing?
Harry, definition time first, please. What does emotional resilience mean?
Well, emotional resilience is basically our individual capacity to cope emotionally with the adversities of life. The interesting word resilience comes from the Latin resilio, which means to bounce back. So it's our ability to bounce back. And I love the Aesop fable, the oak and the reed.
Remind me?
The oak is this big, powerful tree that sits there beside a river and says, I'm invincible. Nothing is going to touch me. Down at the bottom of these humble little reeds. And then, of course, the big storm comes. And the storm, because the oak has no ability to bounce back, gets uprooted and lands on its side. And the little reed goes back and forth and back and forth. And when the storm is over, the reed is still there, but the oak is in trouble.
And what wisdom do you derive from that?
The wisdom from that is that we all need this great flexibility with life, this adaptability. That's the magic word. Resilience is about adaptability, and it's our ability to cope. And, you know, that ability to swing, you know, as things are going, like, let's face it, we are living in a world that is absolutely fraught with problems and difficulties and challenges, especially for our young people. I have been talking at length for the last decade about the fact that our young people are struggling. And why do they have such high incidence of anxiety and depression and eating disorders and self-harm and all the rest of it? And it's because they're really lacking these critical emotional resilience skills. And to me, if we could teach ourselves some of these skills and pass these skills on, and I've had this constant conversation with principals and teachers and guidance counsellors and parents, and we all believe the same thing. That it's really a question of equipping our children and ourselves, because we're all great at saying the kids don't have these skills, but a lot of the time we don't have these skills. And then when trouble comes, we burn out, we get into difficulty, we really struggle, we can't cope. So these are the magic resilience skills that make that.
Anne-Marie Creven, this is really a conversation, I suppose, about adaptation to change, isn't it, and coping with stress. What are the bigger stressors that you see in people's lives?
Well, some of the major stressors, like bereavement or separation and divorce, they are kind of stressors where I don't think resilience is the whole picture. I don't think it's reasonable to expect people to bounce back from those kind of events particularly quickly, because those are really life-changing events. They really shake your sense of who you are. So, for example, maybe you were a wife and now the label somebody gives you is a widow. That shift doesn't fit very well. So I think resilience is really important in terms of coping with everyday stressors, the kinds of things that our low-level stress, maybe not doing as well in an exam as you hoped. I think resilience is so important there. We need to be able to pick ourselves up and move on. But for bereavement, to some degree, for separation and divorce and those kind of stressors, I'd give a bit more leeway to people. You can't just bounce back. It'll take a bit longer and it might mean a big shift in how you live your life. So you won't be quite the same person. You might need to rely a little bit more on people, but I think that's okay.
I remember, because I know you want to talk about disaster resilience, I remember reporting from Southeast Asia in the wake of the tsunami in 2004, and that was something, like you described there, that was so big, so overwhelming.
We basically used
so
a high-end computer.
I don't know where that came from, my apologies. So enormous that people just were numb. They were completely unable to grieve and react in the normal way. Like you say, resilience is just not something that is in our toolbox when it comes to those really, really big events.
Well, I think for disaster resilience, you know, that's the ability of people and communities and countries to adapt to natural disasters. And we're seeing more of them with climate change, of course. And each disaster posture is different and will be experienced differently, but there can be long-term effects of those. So I suppose resilience in that context isn't so much on expecting individuals to pick themselves up and say, it's grand, all right, because it's not grand, but supporting communities practically and tangibly with the relief needed is something that might help in the long term. So in some contexts, people should be resilient. And in other contexts, I think we should really mitigate their need to be resilient. There are some stressors where you shouldn't have to face them. So, for example, we hear a lot in the media this week about non-consultant hospital doctors. They move around a lot. They are often not paid on time. I wouldn't be telling them to be resilient. They shouldn't have to be resilient. They should be paid in a timely manner. And another kind of stressor people are facing, and we heard about it from Brian O'Donovan there, is, you know, the worry about climate and climate anxiety. And I don't think resilience there is what people need. I actually think not experiencing climate change to the degree that we are is what we need. So in some cases, resilience is absolutely what we need. And in other cases, tangible and practical measures to remove or reduce the stressor is what we're looking for.
Where we can't remove the stressor, Harry, how do we build up our emotional resilience?
Well, you see, I totally agree with everything Anne-Marie said there. I think there's a lot of wisdom in what she's saying. I particularly want to comment on bereavement there. Bereavement is a totally unique experience. You know, it'd been quite different. And what I'm really talking about is something quite subtly different. I'm talking about our individual capacity to cope with the ordinary things of life that happen to us all. And I wrote a book called Emotion Resilience, and I laid out 20 key, what I call critical emotional resilience skills. And maybe if I go through some of those to give you an idea of what we're talking about. So 10 of those would be person resilience skills. And these are the ones I see over decades. These are the skills that I see. They're rooted in CBT. They're really, really important skills.
Cognitive behavior therapy.
And these are the skills that us and our children should have. For example, unconditional self-acceptance, the ability to learn to accept ourselves and be comfortable with ourselves and to take responsibility for our actions. Flooding, the ability...
Lord, help me to accept.
To accept all the different things. Flooding is a fantastic technique that teaches young people, for example, and all of us, how can we get rid of panic attacks and phobias out of our life, which are destroying the lives of many of our young people. Dealing with uncertainty. My God, we are heading into huge periods of uncertainty. How do I cope with uncertainty in my everyday life? Learning how to live with discomfort, the most probably underrated one of all. So many people just can't handle discomfort, and we need to teach them the skill of how to do that. And I lay out how you do all these things. How to cope with success or failure. Our young people cannot handle failure. They don't know what to do when things don't go their way.
Is that because they're being told right the way throughout their young life, you're absolutely brilliant,
you're wonderful, you're the best. And all of these things, this is why it's so important that we teach them these skills. And this is why I talk to many coaches and young people who are teaching young people these kind of skills. How to stop catastrophizing all the time. How to stop this visualize all the time something awful.
That everything is always the worst case scenario.
How to stop being a perfectionist. If there's one thing that I see destroys people, it's perfectionism. I've seen this absolutely ruin lives. So teaching from a very early age, that perfection, my little granddaughter in America is 6. She put it beautifully one day when her mother talked about perfection. She said, "Mommy, there's no such thing as perfect. Life is not perfect." And my God, I felt like cheering. What a wonderful outfit. Challenging procrastination. How many of us keep delaying and delaying and delaying and delaying? How many things build up in our lives and cause huge amounts of problems? And mindfulness. How many of us really have simple mindfulness skills? How many have good problem-solving skills? If I had my way, we teach philosophy, we teach problem-solving, we teach emotion resilience, and we teach everyday life skills to kids. And I would far prefer they did those subjects long before they did many, many of the academic subjects that they're dealing with.
And what are social resilience skills, Harry?
These are what I call, I have another book coming out next year on this, but these are the wonderful skills that are all about how we interact with each other from a social point of view, how we develop empathy, how we read nonverbal cues, how we become comfortable in a social situation. 5 to 8% of our people struggle with social anxiety. You can clear social anxiety in a couple of sessions. It's tragic that you see people living their lives. People with performance anxiety who really struggle don't take advances in their companies because they don't want to know how to present things. How to converse with people. And then life resilience skills, how to deal. This is, I remember saying this to a Leaving Cert class, the last thing I said to them walking out the door, let anybody here leave this room with the idea that life is going to be fair. Life is innately unfair. So how can I teach myself to cope with the unfairness of people and the unfairness of life?
Indeed. Anne-Marie, let me bring you back in there, because lest we create a misconception here, this is not about you having to fall back on your own internal resources and cope alone, is it? You can develop resilience with the help of others.
Yeah, absolutely. So resilience is often discussed as an individual quality, and we could accidentally give the impression that it is something you have or don't have, and it can be nurtured, and it's just about you. But some part of resilience is identifying your coping, your ways of coping, and that might often be other people. So that can be people you lean on for emotional support when you need it, or for practical help, or even knowing, look, I need a bit of professional counselling or whatever it is to help me get back on track. So being aware of those things in itself is really important. So resilience is not just about yourself. It's about identifying who in your network might be supportive, and not drawing necessarily too heavily on any one person, but in using what's available to you. And I think that can really help. And Harry gave loads of other tips there on things that people might do at the individual level.
Mm-hmm. I get the sense, Harry, reading between the lines, that the section of society, the cohort that you're most worried about in terms of developing these skills, is young adults, those who are leaving school, going to college, entering the workplace.
They are, because from talking to numerous principals and teachers and ETBs and guidance counsellors and groups right across the country, the overwhelming message coming back to me over and over again is that there is a feeling amongst them that our young people are not as resilient now, as say we would have been 20, 30 years ago. We were forced by circumstances, Philip, to learn a lot of those skills. We learned them on the hoof. We didn't really get the opportunity to. But a lot of our young people nowadays are not learning them. And I think the first real, shall we say, stressor that these young people have really faced in their lives is actually the pandemic. And that was the first real, and many of them did very well, actually, but many of them really, really struggled. And if you go to college, for example, you just ask the campus counsellors about the tsunami of mental health difficulties that they're seeing. They're really struggling there. And the reason for that is that a lot of these skills, which seem so simple and so ordinary and so basic, these are the skills that decide, will I handle these situations? I totally agree with Anne-Marie. None of us are an island, and we need to work together and help each other. I would love to see classes and teachers and classes and groups getting together and young people helping each other to develop these skills. But the critical message today is that this is not something I have or I don't have. These are skills that we can learn.
And we can develop, indeed. Yeah, yeah. Harry Barry and Anne-Marie Craven, thank you both very much.